Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care. Working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Thursday, join us for a personal tour of Vaccinations and Your Rights in the U.S., a show co-hosted by HWC founder and homeopath Debbie Brook and attorney at law Alan Phillips. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your thoughts and questions. Let's go!
Well, good afternoon. This is Alan Phillips, attorney at law, co-hosting this regular Thursday show. Today is September 29th, 2011. I regret to inform you that our usual co-host, founder of Homeopathy World Community, Debbie Brook, is not here today, but we have a wonderful and very well-qualified replacement co-hosting today with me instead of Debbie, Richard Roberts, Rich Roberts. And Rich is the manager for the Pandemic Response Project. That's a project of mine that was launched back in 2009 and early 2010. In one sense, exactly what it says there, a Pandemic Response Project, or a project assembled in response to the swine flu pandemic of 2009 and 2010, that many of us had suspicions about as it played out in terms of was it a real pandemic or not, and concerns about the way it was being managed or mismanaged. And we have since come to recognize, at least by authorities in Europe, if not as much here in the U.S., that the swine flu pandemic was really not a genuine pandemic, and there were a number of problems with that. But one of the things that came to light during the 2009-2010 pandemic was the existence of health laws in states around the U.S. that can mandate vaccines, emergency vaccines in a declared emergency, and without exemptions. The exemptions that apply to routine immunizations often do not apply to emergency vaccines. So we are, the Pandemic Response Project, focused on a long-term project, it appears at this point, the reform of primarily state emergency health laws, but there are also issues with federal laws as well, to give people the right to choose or refuse emergency vaccines in a declared emergency, among other things. Rich, are you with us today?
I am. Thank you for having me on, Alan.
Well, it's a great pleasure. Rich has been helping me with the Pandemic Response Project for many months now, providing invaluable support and assistance. And Rich, I understand that you have some topics today that you wanted to bring up to our listeners concerning some vaccines, and I think some of that was concerning Gardasil, which has been in the mainstream and alternative news big time lately for at least two or three different reasons. So what have you got for us today on Gardasil?
Yes, I did want to talk about Gardasil in particular because it has been such a hot issue lately in the press, and I have some recent articles here that I'd like to go through, and we can just discuss this, and please jump in at any time if you would like to make comments, Alan, or have questions, and we can talk about it. But I'm going to start here with an article from the Alliance for Human Research Protection, and as you know, recently the Republican presidential candidate Michelle Bachmann, she strongly criticized Rick Perry for his previous executive order, which had mandated Texas schoolgirls to be vaccinated with Merck's HPV vaccine, Gardasil, HPV being human papillomavirus. Anyway, Bachmann went so far as to call this executive order an abuse of Perry's executive power as governor. And I know a lot of people have... aren't really kind of politically behind Michelle Bachmann, but I do think that she's done us a service to kind of bring this issue to the light. And she basically stated also that Merck had made millions of dollars because of that mandate, and that Governor Perry had received thousands of dollars in campaign contributions from Merck. And she also noted that Governor Perry's former chief of staff was a chief lobbyist for Merck. So right off, we're confronted with quite a few conflicts of interest here. And, so this has caused quite a stir in the press, both ways.
Let me chime in with just a quick a comment on there, if I may, Rich, that my understanding, and this is something that Perry did with a governor's executive order, it's my understanding that in the arena of infectious disease, a proper use of the executive power and an executive order concerning vaccines, and I'm speaking for purposes of this comment within the mainstream view of vaccines, a proper exercise of that authority would be a situation where there was a current epidemic or serious infectious disease issue where an emergency vaccine would need to be ordered, because the state laws refer to in terms of what's required, refer to routine immunization. State laws, as far as I know, don't anticipate hypothetical future events and say, sort of prospectively, and you must be vaccinated with any emergency vaccine that comes out. I mean, it's a situation where a governor would make a decision. Is there, or a leading state health authority in a state, is there a current situation in our state or some part of our state that is an infectious disease emergency that really requires an executive order to mandate the vaccine? And so for Perry to come out, or any governor to come out and use the power of executive authority to issue an executive order to mandate a non-emergency vaccine, is just seems on its face to be, as you just mentioned, as Michelle Bachmann criticized, an abuse of that authority. But of course, there's so many different layers and levels to the Gardasil issue. You know, one layer is criticizing Perry for a misuse or abuse of that authority. There are others, of course, concerning the safety and efficacy of the Gardasil vaccine, and Gardasil in particular, should we be, as a society and our governments, be real careful and hesitant about mandating something that is intermixed necessarily with religious or moral beliefs concerning sexuality of, in particular, minors. But anyway, let me get back out of your way and let you go on.
Well, this is an interesting article. It goes on to argue the case that mandatory vaccination, in this case with HPV or Gardasil, is completely unsupportable, and the logic being that, you know, this is really kind of generally a benign sort of viral infection with no treatment needed. And it points out here that that this condition is actually present in 50% of the sexually active population, and it does not automatically develop into any sort of cancer. And it goes on to say that early detection of precancerous cervical cells is readily accomplished by routine pap smears, which women in the U.S. routinely have anyway. And, of course, as you know, there's several kind of complications related to this Gardasil vaccine. I'm looking right now at a chart from the VAERS system, which is the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System. And right off, you know, I'm seeing kind of alarming statistics, 53 cases of encephalitis, 49 cases of abnormal behavior, 90 cases of speech disorder, 138 cases of facial palsy. And as you know, I mean, generally, with this system, it's estimated that only 1 to 10% of the injuries are even going to be reported, and it's quite easy to just find adverse events related to this vaccine, with little girls, you know, dying, et cetera. So it's kind of alarming that with that kind of a safety record that we would have, you know, a governor issuing an executive order to make this mandatory. As you might suspect, following such high publicity criticism, there was kind of a backlash. And we all know that Big Pharma is behind this, but I'm referencing another article here from Prison Planet, which is Alex Jones's website. And he basically is accusing Big Pharma of launching a hoax claiming that this vaccine, the Gardasil vaccine, is completely safe, despite the CDC's own figures that are confirming over 18,000 cases of adverse reactions.
Well, this has really been strange to me, Rich, that I've seen reference in mainstream media recently just jumping all over Michelle Bachmann for having dared to completely erroneously refer to Gardasil as having any sort of safety issue whatsoever. And yet when you look at the adverse event reporting system statistics, this is one of the worst vaccines. It's the one of the ones with the most questionable safety record, and you add on top of that that it's something that, I mean, you don't get this, you don't get cervical cancer by being in the same room with somebody, you know, like you might catch a cold or other infectious diseases. I mean, this is a supposedly, sexually transmitted disease, and it's, you know, that gets into a whole different arena about who should be taking what kind of options and for what reasons and in terms of prevention and care here. So it's just mind-boggling to me and very frustrating to see that mainstream media are instantly and immediately and quite disingenuously, I think it's a polite word for it, just dismissing the concern about safety with Gardasil altogether. And then, but as you are reporting and implied by your information this afternoon, you don't really have to look very far to find significant evidence of serious harm. I think even the vaccine adverse reporting system now shows over 100 girls or young women who died after getting the Gardasil vaccine. That's not something you can write off as coincidence or trivial. And by the way, technically speaking and factually speaking, the vaccine adverse event reporting system is not a report of confirmed vaccine injuries or deaths. It's reports of people who believe the vaccine has caused an injury or death, and usually that's something that happens in probably more often than not, something that happens in close proximity in time, the death or injury to the administration of the vaccine. Odds are that most of them do represent a vaccine injury or death or vaccine-related injury or death. But just as a technical matter to let listeners know, it's not actually a report. But, you know, by the same token, people will point to the vaccine injury compensation program where there is some adjudication process that will result in about a quarter of the time, roughly 25% of applicants to the vaccine injury compensation program go away with some kind of award. Just because someone doesn't get an award doesn't necessarily mean that it wasn't a vaccine injury or death. It merely means that they were not able to make a connection in a way that the judges in these cases saw or confirmed the connection. So I guess that argument works both ways is my point there. But larger than either of those systems, though, as a way of trying to measure is the issue you just mentioned, Rich, and this is information that comes from the CDC and the FDA, that up to as many as 90 to 99% of adverse drug events generally and as well vaccine adverse events are not reported. And it's not just the really trivial or minor adverse events, redness and swelling around the injection site and that sort of thing, that don't get reported. We have some really strong evidence, research, credible research, showing that vaccines may be a primary cause of SIDS, for example, sudden infant death syndrome, and yet many cases that are documented as SIDS, which is really just an umbrella term that means we don't know what the cause of death is. Many of those cases probably are vaccine injuries, but they're just not recorded as such for a variety of reasons. We'll save that for another time. But
well, that's right, Alan. And in spite of like all this sort of public detail about the danger and adverse events related to Gardasil, you mentioned how disingenuous some of the people in the mainstream press have been. I'd like to just take a look at a couple of things that they've said just to point out. how to touch with reality some of these comments are. I'll start with Dr. William Schaffner of Vanderbilt University. On ABC News, he said that the HPV vaccine or other vaccines are wonderfully safe vaccines. They've been tested extensively, and we're quite comfortable saying they're safe. Now, you know, he's associated with the National Foundation for Infectious Diseases, which has been a very generous giver to Bill and Melinda Gates, as well as Paul Offit, who, as you well know, is a vaccine promoter, who holds a $1.5 million research position at Merck. Also, maybe even more kind of outrageous, Dr. Arthur Kaplan, he's the director of the University of Pennsylvania Bioethics Center. He actually went public and offered Michelle Bachmann $10,000 if she could produce solid evidence of a case in which a vaccine victim developed a mental disability following a Gardasil shot. And the sneaky thing about that, Alan, is it's real easy to say something like that. And, of course, the mainstream media is going to pick that up and go with it. But to the extent that, and I don't think Michelle Bachmann will touch this, but to the extent that somebody comes back and provides him that evidence, you'll never hear anything about that in the mainstream news.
No, and of course, so there's, as you just reported, there's a long list of Gardasil deaths and injuries, and maybe, I don't know if there's anyone who would fit that strict label that he's proposing, or if he really meant that in more general terms than what he said. You know, for all we know, there's a long list of adverse events, and including death, but none of them are the exact match for what he just offered
right.
him money for. So I don't know.
Well, death, pregnancy complications, convulsions, seizures, and you're right. That's probably part of the being disingenuous too. Is that they play games with semantics like that constantly, and so. But it's just as what you would expect when this kind of went big in the public kind of arena. You would expect that sort of backlash from Big Pharma and Big Pharma spokespeople. And so once again, we see the corporate press just sort of get on board, no questions asked, and promote this stuff. Probably even more kind of concerning, Alan, and we discussed this briefly, is some recent kind of findings by SaneVax Incorporated. And I'm looking at an article here from the Health Impact News Daily. And basically what SaneVax found, they tested 13 different vaccine vials of Gardasil. These were from around the world, okay, so we're talking different countries, namely they tested New Zealand, Australia, Spain, Poland, France, and also three states in the U.S. And what they found was that they found the HPV DNA in these vaccines. And these vaccines are not supposed to contain any of this viral DNA. This is supposed to be filtered out. And so this becomes a huge kind of question for medical people everywhere. What really is the effect of that? And I have a quote here from Dr. Sine Hang Lee. He's a pathologist at the Milford Hospital pathology lab. And this guy is well known for using cutting-edge DNA sequencing for molecular diagnosis, it says. So this is somebody at the cutting edge of DNA research. And what he discovered was that these viral kind of DNA residues were actually attached to the aluminum adjuvant that was in the vaccination. And Dr. Lee went on to say that typically, you know, HPV DNA would not remain in the bloodstream for very long. However, the DNA in the Gardasil was not natural. It had been genetically engineered. And so it was really hard to predict what that it would do, and that once a segment of that DNA was inserted into a human cell, you really couldn't be sure whether it would cause any mutation or not. But basically, that the host cell would contain human DNA as well as this genetically engineered viral DNA. And so this seems to be like a major point of concern as far as I can see. SaneVax, of course, criticized the FDA as well as Merck for releasing this. And this article goes further to point out that in the original packet insert for the Gardasil vaccine, they actually kind of make the claim that there was no sort of viral DNA. And so that was a lie, of course. But then as of April 2001, that line was sort of mysteriously absent from the product insert. So it's as if Merck's sort of running behind the scenes here, changing the information that they're publishing in regard to this Gardasil vaccine in response to these discoveries. So I think, you know, one thing that this brings to mind for me is when I was reading that this viral DNA was attaching to the aluminum adjuvant, that kind of struck me funny, and it was it made me kind of question a lot of the synergy of, well, how do a lot of these compounds and vaccinations really combine in the body? And I think there's probably next to no research about that. And apparently they had trouble discovering this DNA in the vaccine at first just because it was connected with the aluminum. And so that was not sort of what they were expecting or what they were looking for. You know, and it also kind of takes me way back, Alan, to my early studies of Edgar Cayce. And one of the things that he was most concerned about was aluminum toxicity in the body, especially as people get older, and that the body has a hard time getting rid of this. And so just that the aluminum is there in the first place is a problem, but then when we see it kind of combining with this sort of viral genetic material, I mean, who can say, who could really say what negative consequences that could create in the human body? And
wow.
Steinbach goes on to say that they believe both the FDA and Merck were at least negligent and perhaps fraudulent when claiming there was no HPV viral DNA in the Gardasil vaccine. And I have to say that I agree to make that claim and then to find that there so clearly. It does seem like to me that it's negligent and even fraudulent.
Well, there are some people who are asking the Justice Department to look into this, and so who knows what the response will be, but we certainly hope they will. It was interesting. I heard some information recently suggesting that if you have enough mercury and you're giving it to mice, and so that a high enough concentration that it kills 1 in 100 mice, and you have a high enough concentration of aluminum that kills 1 in 100 mice, if you mix the two together, it will kill all 100 mice. I don't know if that's a literal experiment or an analogy or what have you, but it's an interesting point because it suggests that with a very particular instance of it, the mixture of or combination of aluminum and mercury. And by the way, the so-called mercury-free vaccines are not mercury-free. They have lower levels of mercury than prior vaccines. But according to Dr. Paul King, when you factor in the currently recommended vaccines, in particular the flu vaccine, even with the so-called mercury-free, which are really just lower levels of mercury vaccines, you end up getting exposed to even more mercury than at the time prior to the so-called mercury-free vaccines because of the additional recommended vaccines, flu vaccines, and maybe there are other ones as well. Gardasil, meningitis, other ones that for the most part aren't mandated, I believe. But It's all medically and scientifically complex and very much under-researched at this point, as far as I know, in terms of what do each of these individual ingredients do, but what do they do in combination, which
right.
may be something very different than what they do individually.
And I think it's particularly sad that, in spite of all these questions that are unanswered, the CDC is now considering this shot for boys as well. So it's not enough that we're giving this vaccine to the girls and inflicting all this damage. Now they want to give it to all the little boys. And this is really controversial because this is sexually transmitted. And so to take this into the school arena, it just brings up a lot of ethical questions about who's responsible for what. And that we need to get the school systems involved in, you know, promoting these vaccines and that they're pushing them all the more, you know, they push them so aggressively in spite of all these sort of safety problems. It's sort of unconscionable.
No, I hadn't thought about it until just now, but it raises potentially even a constitutional issue because when you mandate a vaccine for a disease that's sexually transmitted, in effect what you're saying by doing that, I mean, and the Gardasil, I think, is not mandated in most states at this point. I think it's just a recommended vaccine. But in any event, let's suppose for a moment that it were to be mandated or any place that it maybe currently is mandated. when a state mandates a vaccine that for a disease that's preventable by either avoiding sex or having, you know, making informed choices in terms of how you engage in sex and so forth, you're talking about something that for minors, for children under 18, really is a parental issue. It's not a parental issue, arguably, whether or not your child gets exposed to some other kid in the class who has measles. Your child has to go to school if another kid, and assuming vaccines work, another kid isn't vaccinated and catches the measles and can spread it to other people or something like that. But you're not talking about a contagious disease in the more typical sense of vaccinated diseases. Again, all speaking within the mainstream understanding and views of vaccines and infectious disease. So in effect, when you if a state mandates the Gardasil vaccine, it's saying that parents are not competent to deal with raising their children with regard to this issue. And this is an issue that's come up in relation to, for our purposes, in relation to laws that allow children to consent to vaccines, for example, that's bypassing the parental authority. And in effect, when a state enacts a law that allows children to consent to any medical treatment, but for our purposes, vaccines, the state is saying that parents are incompetent to make those decisions for their children. And that's a violation of constitutional rights, because under the 14th Amendment's Due Process Clause, every parent in this country is considered to be or presumed to be a fit parent for all purposes related thereto, unless and until the parent is dragged into court and adjudicated otherwise. You pull someone into court, you show your evidence, and the judge says, yes, this is an unfit parent, and enters an order accordingly, then at that point you're an unfit parent. But until, you know, it's the innocent until proven guilty concept there. We are presumed to be fit parents unless we're shown otherwise. And so really, when you think about it, mandating the Gardasil vaccine in particular potentially, you know, raises that question, at least in my mind. Now, how that would play out in court is anybody's guess, but I think there's potentially an argument there. Still with us, Rich? Rich, are you still with us? Okay, we may have lost Rich. I will see if I can see if I can catch up with Rich. We are going to go to a short break. Make the effort here. I believe I was successful recently in uploading a song of mine called Destiny Freedom. Let me take a minute just to explain the story about the song, and then I will we'll take a break and listen to the song. It's about 4 minutes, and then we'll come back on the other side and finish today's show. So this is a song that was written in response to a Freedom Song Contest initiated by Natural Solutions, that's Dr. Rima LeBeau and company, and earlier this year. And so I put together the song, and in thinking about a couple of the primary themes that Natural Solutions, or issues that Natural Solutions focuses on, those include vaccines, concerns about vaccines, and about GMOs, and so references to both are made here in this song. So this is called Destiny Freedom. Hope you enjoy this. We'll catch you on the other side in about 4 minutes.
Across this land, both near and far, throughout the human race, within each beating heart, there is a dream whose time has come for us to claim our birthright, each and every one. Evil hands have intervened,
controlling from the shadows, think they can't be seen. But we have eyes, see in the dark, to cast a light upon the madness we embark. Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency, for we must be the masters of our destiny. Upon their face, sincerity, while underneath a self-agenda does proceed. But falsity perfumes the air. The sin screams louder than the finest ever there. They'll fill your place with GMOs, and soon your lineage will never cease to grow. Inject your blood with toxic waste. The world is all the fairs if you'll just die in haste. Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency, for we must be the masters of our destiny. Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency, for we must be the masters of our destiny. For we must be the masters of our destiny. For we must be the masters of our destiny. Oh. Attorney at law. We have a caller on the line, phone number ending in 9. Are you with us? 6109? Okay, caller, 6109. Not hearing anybody. Boy, I hope it's not my headset or equipment that's going out. I do not hear. Rich, are you with us? Okay, I do not hear Rich, and I do not hear the caller 6109. I hope the system is still functioning properly here. I'm going to go ahead and keep talking then. It's a little after 12:30, September 29th, 2011. You're listening to Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. with Homeopathy World Community. Usual co-host, Miss Debbie Brook, not able to be with us today. I'm Alan Phillips, attorney at law, was here the first half of the show with the Pandemic Response Project Manager, Rich Roberts, and not able to hear. Rich, are you there? Rich, are you there? Rich, are you there? Okay, caller 6109, are you there? Caller 6109, are you there? Okay, for some reason seem to be having a problem with the system today. Well, I'll keep on talking here to move on to some other topics that we wanted to talk about today. we had a show last week where we focused on healthcare worker employees since the swine flu pandemic in particular, and despite the fact that that pandemic has been shown by credible mainstream health officials in Europe and credible scientists and researchers elsewhere to have been essentially a fake pandemic. There was a swine flu virus, but the definition of level 6 pandemic, the World Health Organization's level 6 pandemic definition was actually changed. The World Health Organization changed that definition despite objections from several countries, so that a very mild disease, the swine flu, could qualify for a level 6 pandemic. When they did that, they triggered contract clauses with the pharmaceutical industry and countries around the world for the production of swine flu emergency vaccines to the tune of some $18 billion in U.S. funds, or in terms of U.S. dollars, but $18 billion worth of vaccines for countries around the world, most of which were never even administered. And so very questionable management. Even the British Medical Journal criticized the World Health Organization's mishandling of the swine flu pandemic and indicated some disinformation or false information that was given by the World Health Organization. I'll say here, again, we seem to be experiencing some technical difficulties. I would ask Rich, if you're still listening, if you're still there, and if you haven't already tried this, hang up and call back in. And I'll say the same thing for caller 6109. Please call back in and see if you can get in. And I will try again to put both of you back on the air. But in the meantime, I'll keep talking about some of the other topics we wanted to talk about today. So briefly, I wanted to just kind of recap last week, because this is an important issue, healthcare employees in particular, though I've been hearing from new categories of people just in the last few weeks that I hadn't heard from in weeks and months and years past. For example, I've heard from a few pharmacists who are calling me to ask for my assistance to understand what their rights are and how can they refuse employer-mandated vaccines. I had a pharmacist out in the western part of the country who said he was required to not only get a flu shot by his employer, he's required to give flu shots to customers in the pharmacy, and he's required to say, would you like fries with that? Although, of course, would you like a flu shot with that? All right, I see caller 6109 has called back in. All right, I've got you on the air. Can you hear me? Are you there, caller 6109? Okay, again, I'm not hearing you, and I don't know why. Can you hear me now? Okay, I'm just hearing dead silence there. I don't know what the problem is. I tell you what, folks, I'm going to take a one-minute break. I'm going to call back in myself and see back into the system, hang up and call right back and see if that takes care of it. So we'll have a very short break here. Please stay with us, and thank you for bearing with us with these technical difficulties. Okay, I believe we're back, and back in. Thank you for waiting. Caller 6109, give it one more try. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm still not hearing you. I've called back into the show, so I don't know what else I can do about this. I have to check into this later. So I'll continue with some discussion here about employer vaccine requirements. Hello? I have no idea. Try dial. Are you 6109? Are you 6109? Okay, call back in and see if you can get in. Taking a quick call from our today's co-host, Rich Roberts, trying to get in, and I don't know what the problem is, but we'll be trying to work with that if we can. So I've heard from new categories of employees. I heard from a couple of airline employees in the last few weeks, never heard from airline employees previously. They're being required. So the pro-vaccine agenda is moving forward. And really, to put it in kind of simplistic terms, the pro-vaccine agenda has really got only two components to their agenda, really. The pharmaceutical industry, the vaccine manufacturers, want to do really two things. Everybody who's already currently mandated to get a vaccine should be mandated to get even more vaccines. And if you are not currently mandated to get a vaccine, you should be. And that's the kind of agenda we see moving forward. So we're seeing more and more vaccines added to the agenda. I mean, the last information I saw directly on this particular point that I'm about to mention, there was something on the order of 335 or so vaccines that are either currently on the market or in production, in development and research and production. There really is no end to the number of vaccines that can be ultimately manufactured and potentially certainly recommended once they're manufactured and tested and potentially mandated, and more vaccines for more and more of us. So just because you're out of your childhood years doesn't mean that you're not subject to vaccine mandates, as hospital employees around the country are finding. Since the pandemic, hospitals have increasingly been requiring, as a condition of employment, that healthcare workers get most often the flu vaccine, whether they have patient contact or not. I've even had people contact me who are in a separate building from the hospital dealing with, I don't know, computer-related matters or things not having anything to do with direct patient contact at all. And they say, hey, we're being told we have to get the flu shot too. And in some cases, it's also a DTaP or MMR, potentially other vaccines. So again, there's no real end to this.
Hi, Rich Alan. Roberts. This is Rich. I'm back with you here.
Okay, great. Rich is in and live. Rich, glad to have you back. I don't know what the problem was. Let me try one more time. Is the person at 6109 still with us? Okay, not able to hear that person if they're still on the line. So if they want to try calling back one more time, it appears the system is now working again, and please do call back in again if you'd like. Rich, we lost her for a few minutes there, and
I wasn't sure if you lost me or I lost you, but I had continued talking and was planning to just eventually try to call you, but so did you?
Well, one of us was still there, and I can't say for sure which one. I called back in and still was not able to hear. We had a caller and still wasn't able to hear him, but we're on live now. We're both of us here, so I've been talking a little bit about employer mandated vaccines. We can go back and listen to the archive later and find out which one of us was live and on the air. Then I'm glad we both kept on talking.
I did keep on talking, so, but I definitely want to go back and revisit some of this stuff, because as I was speaking, I was definitely missing having you on board for your commentary. But if we could just go all the way back to the Gardasil issue, I really would like to kind of talk about this Gardasil bill.
Let's pick up with that then, and we'll go from there then. Please do.
Okay. Well, as you know, in California, they recently voted in favor of a bill permitting children as young as 12 to agree to treatment to prevent sexually transmitted diseases without parental consent. And this article that I'm looking at, which is actually from the California Daily, goes on to say that the legislators who voted for this, the Gardasil bill as it was called, received approximately $40,000 from the drug manufacturer. So again, we see a conflict of interest, but But even more concerning, I just really question the policy behind this, that 12-year-olds should be able to, you know, consent to receiving these vaccinations on their own without parental consent, especially since we're talking about preventing sexually transmitted disease. It just seems like they're trying to take the parents out of an issue where the parents should rightfully be.
And as I think I mentioned even earlier today, and this is an issue that has come up for us in the past because it's a huge one, and it's my understanding is that this bill passed the General Assembly, the representatives and senators in California, the state representatives and senators, and is now awaiting the governor's signature. So there's been a big campaign within the alternative vaccine community for everybody to call, write, fax, email, any way you can get to the governor of California and say, don't sign this bill. And I certainly hope it's successful, but that as I've repeatedly criticized this bill and law we already have here in North Carolina that allows minors to consent to vaccines without parental involvement, it really is, to me, blatantly unconstitutional, and on two grounds, and I'll address them both again briefly. The first is that anytime you take authority away from a parent, anytime the state takes authority away from a parent and gives it to anybody else, let's say they gave it to the doctor may decide whether or not his minor patient needs the vaccine without the parent's consent. You know, that's one thing a state legislature might have considered or might do. But anytime you take away authority from a parent, you're violating their due process rights. Parents are presumed legally to be fit to parent their children unless and until a court adjudicates otherwise. So if you think somebody's unfit, you drag them into court, you show your evidence, the judge makes a ruling, you know, whether according to the legal standard this person is or is not unfit. And then once there's an order saying that a parent is unfit, okay, then they no longer have that authority. But in the same sense of innocent until proven guilty, we are fit until proven unfit. And so when a state takes that authority away from you as a parent, the state is saying you are unfit for purposes of whatever the authority was. So it even gets more ridiculous when you take that authority away from the parent and you give it to a minor who legally, by definition, is incompetent. And we don't mean that word when we use it legally to define minors in a condescending or offensive way, as the word would be used in general conversation, perhaps, but simply that by definition, a child lacks the maturity, which is why they have parents, which is why we have a point of time in a person's life where, as a matter of law, they are deemed to no longer be a minor and they are now an adult, which is 18 or 21, depending on what purpose you're talking about. You're not an adult for drinking purposes. In few, if any, states are you an adult at 18 for drinking purposes. You are at 21. Of course, you can go off at 18 and die for your country, but we won't get into that conversation. But the point is that however scientifically or arbitrarily the point is defined, there is a point in time in a person's life when they become, as a matter of law, an adult. They are presumed at that point to have the maturity to function as an adult. And prior to that time, you are presumed legally not to have the maturity to make important decisions for yourself, and that's what we have adults for. Children cannot enter into binding contracts. They cannot drink alcohol. They cannot do, you know, a long list of things by definition because they are minors, and yet they can make, potentially in California, if this law gets bill gets signed into law, a decision about whether or not to get a vaccine for a condition that they're only going to get, if at all. I mean, there's a whole separate question about whether Gardasil even prevents cancer. You know, the only way you could really show that would be to do the 20- or 30-year study and see how many people who got the vaccine compared to those who didn't get the vaccine and so forth. There really is no proof that there is some evidence to suggest at best that it is effective in dealing with some percentage of the viral strains that are out there that one can get. But as you mentioned earlier today, Rich, even that is questionable as to how risky it really is. So there's just many, many layers and levels to this problem. But I think it's unconstitutional. And I was just going to add one other quick piece there. I got a little bit long-winded. But the other piece, it's unconstitutional in terms of our due process, 14th Amendment due process rights. But also, if you give the child the authority to consent, it's only the parents that have the authority to exercise an exemption. And in California, it's a wide, broad, philosophical or all beliefs. Could be philosophical or religious, but it's if you have beliefs that are opposed, you can say no. Well, the parent has the authority to exercise that right, not the child. So how can you give the child the authority to get a vaccine when it's the parent that has the right to decide whether or not to exercise the exemption? So again, you're bypassing the parent's state authority as well as the parent's federal constitutional authority.
Right, and so bill is just completely full of holes. It seems offensive to all parents. Just on the common sense check level, this just seems outrageous, and it just makes me question how this stuff gets going at all.
Well, and it raises a real serious issue for us as a legislative issue, and the reality is that, I mean, theoretically, states cannot enact laws that are unconstitutional. But the practical reality is they can enact anything they can get the votes for and the governor's signature on, and if we think it's unconstitutional, it's up to us as citizens to then challenge that law in court and see if we can get a judge to rule that it's unconstitutional. But and it makes sense that it should be that way, because for every person who says something is unconstitutional, there'll be somebody else who says, oh, no, it is constitutional, and here's why. So who gets to decide those disputes? Well, of course, the courts do. And so that's good, all well and good as far as it goes, but the disturbing practical reality is that if you got enough money, you can buy the legislators and get the votes whether the law you want passed is unconstitutional or not. And that's exactly what appears to be the case here when the pharmaceutical industry has made donations to those who are voting in favor of the pharmaceutical industry. I mean, it is... I suppose, arguably, in general terms, appropriate for individuals or companies to donate to campaigns of representatives or political officials or political candidates of their choice. But where do you draw a line because of the conflict of interest involved there? I mean, you know, representatives will tell you, politicians will tell you, well, I don't vote according to who pays me. But how, you know, you can't avoid the appearance of that, at least in some
situations.
Right.
Well, this article actually goes on to point out that of the $40,000 that Merck had donated to California legislators, that the great majority of that did go to those who backed their bill.
So it's kind of disturbing, and it's a complicated problem. Listen, we have this caller has tried it, called in one more time. I'm going to put this person on the air. 6109, are you with us? Hello? Caller, are you with us? Rich, are you still there?
I'm still here.
Okay, I'm not hearing the caller, are you?
I am not.
Okay, so I just must apologize. I don't understand what's going on. I'm running this switchboard here the exact same way I've done it in the past, and I've never seen this problem. I'm so sorry, but if you can get to us on the chat in the next couple of minutes, I'd be glad to address a question if you had a question or to relay your comment. And I do sincerely apologize to our caller today that we've not been able to get you in. I've never seen or had this technical difficulty before, so I don't know quite what's going on with it. Rich called back in, and we were able to get him, and I'm doing the exact same thing on the switchboard with the caller as I have done with you, Rich, so I don't know why the caller is not there with us. I'll have to look into that. Apologize, and please feel free to email me if you had a question. And any of our listeners, Alan Phillips, I'm at attorney@vaccinerights.com, attorney@vaccinerights.com. And let me take just a quick minute. I have written an e-book that's called The Authoritative Guide to Vaccine Legal Exemptions, the only source documentation I know of anywhere that explains vaccine exemption and waiver rights. And but not only that, goes into some depth and detail, 120 pages worth in the ebook, giving some general information about the law and then some very specific information about vaccine exemption and waiver law, and addresses a wide variety of different contexts in which exemption and waiver issues come up: military, immigration, schools, public-private schools, military schools, healthcare employees, what I call vaccine custody disputes, where parents split up and disagree about whether or not to vaccinate the children, all these in different contexts and more. You can find it at homeopathyworldcommunity.com, homeopathyworldcommunity.com. And if you purchase the book by following the links on the homeopathyworldcommunity.com website, the proceeds get divided between Homeopathy World Community and myself to support the work that Debbie Brook and I both do, enormous amounts of volunteer work that we don't bill or get paid for. And so you help both, and you get information that you won't get anywhere else that will help you understand and make informed decisions about your own vaccine exemption and waiver rights. Well, I will try to find out, for the benefit of all concerned, what the technical difficulties may be about here, and hopefully we won't have that problem in the future. But, Rich, we're getting down to the last few minutes here. What would you like to add in, anything else on the Gardasil question or issue? There's so many different pieces to that.
Well, actually, I would like to just get your take on another issue, and this has to do with new state law in California that's requiring students 7th through 12th grade to get vaccinated against pertussis. And this from Natomas, California. It says that school officials are going door-to-door with a traveling nurse to give whooping cough shots to unvaccinated students. And any who do not receive them are not going to be permitted to come to school. So it's kind of come to that they're actually going door-to-door and trying to get the students to take these vaccines.
Boy, and this is starting to look more and more oppressive. I saw language in the federal health care bill, now Obamacare, that actually was providing grants to states for exactly this issue. You know, I saw an article on this and was, I guess, on the one hand, not surprised, but at the same time, just aghast that this was going on at all. And yet not surprised, because I had seen it. And the article I saw was complaining that, oh, California is in such, you know, enormous debt. They don't have money for this. They don't have money for that. But they've got money to send people door to door. Well,
right.
I bet the money comes from federal grants from Obamacare. I can't say for sure without having looked further into it, but I wouldn't be at all surprised if it was federal funds that are funding that. And just this morning I read another article talking about the CDC is now placing calls or having people, having organizations or institutions place calls, maybe sending advance letters, if I understood the article correctly, but, you know, saying, we're going to be calling you soon, have your vaccination records ready. They are trying, apparently, according to the article, and I think it was a Natural News article, trying to locate and assess statistically, quantify, or estimate where are the unvaccinated people and where are the greater numbers or higher densities in terms of the population of an area, unvaccinated people, presumably, of course, to step up promotional campaigns in those areas to try and impose vaccines. And this is really disturbing. And I know California, all over the state, they've been having problems with this recently added sixth grade vaccine mandate, because people have been confused about whether or not they can exercise an exemption to that. Schools have been giving different information, and some kind of different schools giving different information reportedly, and sometimes inaccurate information. And so we've had just a lot of confusion with that, not to mention the question about is there a need, or what is the need for any additional vaccination at that age or not? But of course,
well,
the state
exactly,
mandate,
Alan, this is a booster, right? And I was thinking that the risk
right.
of whooping cough was really with, among infants and very young children. So why would there be a need for?
Well, we're going to be hearing more and more that everyone's a risk, but where there is a risk for, let's say, infants and toddlers or particular or only the elderly or some, you know, particular portion of larger society, the theory is that everyone who's not part of that population could still potentially carry and transmit the disease to someone in the endangered portion of the population. So there will always be a rationale that they will come up with to support what they're doing. The question is, does it really hold water when scrutinized? And what we find many times is that there is very competent, convincing evidence to the contrary, all of which, for my purposes, at least over the short term, is not even a battle that we have to fight and win one way or the other, although the absence of the ability to put competing ideas on the table with equal transparency and exposure to all, for all, is most disturbing. But for short-term purposes, as far as I'm concerned, we need only validate that there are credible sources that disagree to conclude that we should individually, as citizens, have the right to make these decisions ourselves, what vaccines we do or don't want, what other means, if any, we prefer to use to address infectious disease concerns. So it really comes down on one aspect of the larger vaccine controversy to a question of who gets to decide when and perhaps why, especially why when we don't agree with the decisions of that our governments impose on us about those rights or those issues. So, you know, one of the most common questions I get from people who are emailing or calling me as sort of preliminary investigation of their own rights is they'll say, here's the situation, such and such, and then they'll say, you know, can they do that? Can my employer actually require this? Do they have that right? Do I have the right to decide what goes into my body? And when you put it in those words, it seems really fundamental and sort of obvious. Of course you should have the right to decide what goes in your body, but guess what? You don't always have that right. So in that sense, it comes down to, in large part, a legislative issue. Well, if we don't have the right, we need to organize to support and ultimately get enacted laws that give us the right. But, Rich, let me give you the last word here if you've got one to follow up on. We've actually are slightly running over our time here. I want to thank our listeners for listening. I want to apologize again for the technical difficulties. I'm going to do everything I can to get that resolved before next week's show. And, Rich, I really appreciate you taking time out today to fill in for Debbie Brook. Hopefully we'll get to have you back on some more. And just thank you again for all your help and work with the Pandemic Response Project. It's been a tremendous personal and non-personal support to have you involved with that project and to have you on the air with us today. And I know you spent some quality time looking at Gardasil and other issues so that we'd have good information to talk about today. So I really appreciate all of your support and help.
Thank you, Alan. I was glad to be on.
All right, folks, we'll head out with our closing music here as soon as I can find it. And thank you all for listening. We'll see you next week here and every Thursday at noon Eastern Time with Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. Bye-bye now.
Thank you for listening to Vaccinations and Your Rights in the U.S. with co-hosts Alan Phillips and Debbie Brook on Homeopathy World Community Radio. Remember to educate before you vaccinate.
Think of us together, like people everywhere. We dream about a world at work where people really care. Our paths now lie before us, our journeys can't be ended. So they do what we bring us, the wisdom. Walk by walk, we are reaching.
Share your light, let your truth be your girl.